folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to a practical show done by a practical guy like me. This week, I want to do some more reviews. Last week, I talked about first impressions. This week, I kind of have some reviews. I did a lot of shooting last week, or actually in the midweek, I did some shooting, and I want to talk to you about that. I want to ask your forgiveness about something right now. I'm on a business trip, as usual, so I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio. But guess what? I left home, and I didn't bring my favorite recorder and my favorite headset with me, so I'm yakking at my iPhone, which is always weird. You know, I'm used to talking to somebody on the iPhone, but I'm not very used to having a one-way conversation with an iPhone. Have you ever tried that? Try that sometime. Try having a lengthy one-way conversation with an iPhone. See how that works out for you. It's not always too easy, but I'm going to do the best I can, and when I edit this, I'm going to do the best I can to try to take out some of the background noise. Anyway, let me talk to you about my private training that I did, or practice session it was. I guess I shouldn't really call it a training session. Every once in a while, I like to rent a range, and I like to just go practice on my own. And I don't mean just at a square range, at a public range, where I go rent a lane. I like to try to rent a shooting bay that people use for classes. Well, I went to a place to shoot in San Antonio where Ben and I do a lot of our classes down at the Cowboy Action Shooting Range. And I went down there during a time when they weren't very busy. And they had an opening, and so they let me have the range for a few hours. Of course, I can do anything I want down there. I can rapid fire, and I can draw and shoot, and I can move, and they got a bunch of great steel targets down there, which shooting steel is fun. You know, the cowboy action shooters shoot it, and part of the range fees I pay, as long as I'm a good boy, and as long as I don't, you know, maim up their targets too bad, I can shoot their steel targets down there. And they got big ones and really small ones and those that move when you shoot them and things like that. And they've got long distance steel and all that. It's kind of fun. So I took a bunch of my guns down there and I shot 450 rounds. And it was more of a practice session. I was practicing my moving and shooting and my one-handed shooting and my gun manipulations, all the basics, the stuff that pretty much I think anybody who carries a gun needs to know. You need to know that stuff. You need to be able to bust off the X. You need to be able to shoot one-handed. You need to be able to shoot from unconventional positions. You need to be able to shoot targets of different colors. They had all kinds of different steel targets of all different types, different colors, which was really cool. You've got to be able to practice all that stuff, and you got to be able to do it with defensive ammo, you know, your carry ammo, and you also have to be able to do it with your practice ammo, so you feel the different recoil pulses and things. Basically, I was practicing a lot of stuff that I teach in class. So let me tell you what I took with me. Let me tell you what guns I took with me. I don't know if I had a chance to tell you all, but I bought an M&P 9 compact. I decided I wanted to get one more M&P, so I now have three Smith & Wesson M&Ps. I have an M&P 9 Pro, which, by the way, I haven't even got that thing out to shoot IDPA competition yet. I was going to do it last Saturday, and we had a whole bunch of rain here in San Antonio, and it flooded out the range, so they canceled the match. That was going to be my first match shooting my new M&P 9 Pro. But I didn't take that on this practice session with me. I took my M&P 9 Compact. And I got some good things to say about it. I'll be covering that in a little bit. I took a Glock 19. I took a Glock 26. I took my M&P 9 Shield, the new one I got with the no thumb safety. I took my Car PM9. I took my Glock 42. And what else? Oh, and I took my Sig Sauer 1911. Yeah, and the Sig Sauer 1911's in 45 ACP. So I took about 350 rounds of 9mm and 100 rounds of 45. I went down to the range and got everything all set up pretty much just the way I want it. Let me take things one by one. First of all, the M&P 9 Compact. Here's what I want to say about that. Fabulous little gun. And I really, really enjoyed shooting that gun. I probably put 50 or 60 rounds through it at least. Here's what I have to say about it. First of all, I really wish people would not compare the M&P 9 Compact to a Glock 26. If you look at the size and the weight of an M&P 9 Compact, it's more like a Glock 19. It's more like a little bit shrunken down Glock 19. The barrel's a little bit shorter, the grip's a little bit shorter and more rounded. So I think the M&P 9 Compact needs to be compared more to a Glock 19, not a Glock 26, or compared more to an XD9 Compact rather than the subcompact. Because I don't think that the M&P 9 Compact is a subcompact gun yet. People like to compare them. If you want to compare an M&P pistol to a Glock 26, compare the shield to a G26. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But the M&P 9 Compact, very, very soft shooting. One thing I found out about it, I happened to get one with a nice trigger, a decent trigger. Not a really good polymer trigger, but a decent striker-fired trigger is what I meant to say, not polymer trigger. Trigger for a striker-fired gun. It's actually got a reset that I can feel. And, of course, if I'm not at the shooting range and I'm dry-firing, I can actually hear the reset. So, congratulations to Smith & Wesson. They've improved the trigger on that gun considerably. Very soft shooting. I was very surprised how soft shooting that gun is. I don't know how Smith & Wesson does it. But I have to say, it is softer shooting than my Glock 26, although there I go again. Right? I just did what I told you not to do, and I compared it to the Glock 26. It's not softer than my G19. So I'll just say that. Now, you know, your mileage might differ, but I really like it. And, you know, I can fire off some rounds real quickly with that, and it's very accurate, and it was absolutely reliable, not one single malfunction. It's a good gun. It's a real good gun. I wish it was a tad bit lighter. That's all. I wish it was 3 or 4 ounces lighter, but, you know, it is what it is. It's an excellent gun. If you own an M&P 9 Compact, train with it a lot, carry it a lot. It is a fine, fine gun. I put a little bit of a post about this on Facebook, and somebody asked me if I could only choose one gun, the M&P 9 Compact or the Glock 19, which one would I choose? I don't know, folks. That's a tough one. I'll take either one. Flip a coin. And if I could only own one gun, flip a coin. Between those two, I just don't think you can go wrong. Pick whichever one you like better. You know, most of you know I'm partial to Glocks, but hey, if I could only have one gun and I was stuck with an M&P 9 Compact, I wouldn't be frowning at all. I would be carrying with confidence, shooting with confidence, and training with confidence with that gun. I like the fact that Smith & Wesson has just made their M&Ps so ergonomically friendly. I know that that's a very, you know, that's old news. Everybody knows that they're very ergonomically friendly. But I think they've done a great, great job with that. I use the smallest backstrap on mine. In fact, on my M&P 9 Pro, I also put the small backstrap on it. The M&Ps feel better. I did put the medium on, and the medium was okay, but it just wasn't to my liking. The gun fed everything. I ran both full metal jacket and hollow points through it, assorted hollow points and FMJ. It fed everything just perfectly. I think the only thing I'm going to do to that pistol, because you know I like to keep my carry pistols stock, the only thing I'm going to do to that pistol is put some different sights. Although I'll say this, Smith & Wesson puts much, much better sights on their M&Ps out of the box than Glock puts on their pistols. So, again, kudos to Smith & Wesson. They actually put usable steel sights on their pistol. I just don't like 3 white dots. I'm not big on that. So that's probably why I'm going to change that out in the very near future. Okay, now, since I'm on the subject of M&Ps, let's move on to the shield. It was boring. The shield was boring because it was accurate and reliable and soft shooting again. I'm so glad that they finally came out with the no thumb safety version, just because I'm one of those people that don't like thumb safeties on a polymer striker-fired gun. I don't see the need for it. It's not necessary. I do see the need for a manual thumb safety on a single action 1911. Definitely. I definitely understand the need for that. I don't understand the need for a polymer, striker-fired gun with about a 6-pound trigger. I don't understand the need for a thumb safety. So, anyway, I'm so glad that they came out with that. And, again, I ran all different types of hollow point ammo and full metal jacket, 115 grain and 147 grain full metal jacket through my Smith & Wesson Shield, and just boring reliable. But I love the gun. It's a fabulous gun. If you are looking for a single stack 9mm that's extremely easy to conceal, folks, I got to tell you, I've tested the Springfield XDS. I've put the M&P Shield through its paces. The Car PM9, which I own, which I'm going to talk about. I've shot a Ruger LC9. What else did I shoot in 9mm single stack? There was one other. Oh, I shot a Taurus 9mm 6 or 7 weeks ago. I don't think you can find a better one out there than the M&P Shield for the money. The XDS is a fine gun. If you own an XDS, it's a good gun. I mean, don't just go selling it off, and don't think that I'm trashing the XDS. It's a good gun. Okay. Oh, I also shot a Walther PPS about a year and a half ago. That's also a fine gun. I think between the M&P Shield and the Walther PPS, kind of tough to beat either one of those. Both excellent. But my Shield, I just can't say enough good things about it. Very accurate. I was shooting some 45-yard shots with it. At the range that I go to, there's some steel targets out there. One of them is probably about 12 inches wide and 14 inches tall. Piece of cake to hit that at 45 yards. If you can't hit a 12 by 14 piece of steel at 45 yards, you need some training. Okay? But the gun is perfectly accurate. I mean, perfectly accurate. There was also some small pieces of steel that were no more than about 3 inches big, and I was popping those at 15 yards like crazy with my M&P Shield. So, very satisfied with the accuracy of the gun. Okay, the Car PM9. Let me tell you what. After shooting the Shield with a real nice trigger, which is a gun that shoots like a big gun, going down to the Car PM9, it was quite a shock. Now, I've run a lot of rounds through my PM9. I bet this gun's got between 4,000 and 5,000 rounds through it. I've owned a Car PM9 since 2007. I still love it. They have the best double action trigger of any striker fired gun that I've ever tried. You just simply can't beat the double action trigger of any of the Car pistols. I'm a huge fan of them. And the Car PM9 is definitely significantly smaller, but it fed everything. I shot about a little over 70 rounds through my PM9. I've got 6 magazines for it, and I used all 6 because another thing I was trying to do is making sure that everything I have is functioning properly to my liking. You know, I'm all about reliability. All 6 mags, by the way. No problem. I have a combination of the 6-rounders and 7-rounders, and they're all Car magazines, of course. Obviously, it's all you can use in that pistol, but it worked fine. It was extremely reliable. That, I think, is even more accurate than the Shield. And as long as you learn to shoot that long double-action trigger pull, but it's so smooth. It's so smooth. I mean, how many of you have ever shot a gun with a long double-action trigger pull that it seems like it takes forever for the shot to break? You ever shoot a gun like that? Right? I mean, it's a real hard trigger pull, and you're just, it seems like it's taking forever. Not the Car PM9. It's got a real nice break to it. Normally, I get a surprise break. Normally, I don't quite know exactly when it's going to break. And even if I do, it's such a smooth trigger break. I mean, it fires that gun, and it is accurate. Man, Car puts, I mean, they make some very, very accurate pistols. If somebody says to you they can't shoot a Car pistol accurately, that's 99% of the time that's got to be the shooter. It's just got to be the shooter, because the guns are perfectly capable of being highly accurate. They have to learn how to master their trigger. Okay, Glock 19, do I really need to talk about that? How much have you heard me talk about a Glock 19 on the Handgun World podcast? So I'm going to skip that one because I've talked about it probably way too much. I'll say this though, folks, it is still my favorite handgun. And it probably will always be my favorite handgun. I got to tell you this, after shooting the M&P 9 compact, the M&P shield, and then the car, picking up the Glocks and shooting them is like coming back home. Really, it's just like coming back home. And okay, if you're listening to my show and you don't like Glocks, that's fine. If you don't like Glocks, that's okay. I'm not saying you have to get a Glock. I'm not saying that you're, you know, doing something wrong if you don't own a Glock. But I have shot Glock pistols for so long, and so many tens of thousands of rounds, and so many hours and hours and hours of training. I was calculating it. I think I've got pretty much about 120 hours of training under my belt, approximately. So between all the hours of training and all the thousands and thousands of rounds and all that, it's like coming back home, shooting a Glock pistol. So that's all I'm going to say about it. The Glock 26, I was playing around during my practice session, shooting the Glock 26 with the flush magazines and with magazines with a plus zero pinky extension. In other words, all it does is give me a place to rest the pinky. And I read so much and I hear so much about people saying, oh, I can't shoot the Glock 26 with a flush fitting magazine because there's nowhere for my pinky to go. You ever heard that? I bet you have, a lot, right? Well, for me, I could not tell any difference. I loaded up three mags with the pinky extension and three mags that were flush fitting. I got exactly six mags for the Glock 26. By the way, folks, you should have a half a dozen mags at least for every pistol you own. Okay? I'll say that again. You need to have a half a dozen mags for every pistol that you own. You just do. Magazines are like $100 bills. You never have enough of them. Okay? I mean, you know, first of all, magazines on a semi-automatic pistol, that's one of the weak areas. That's where a lot of malfunctions occur. So don't just settle for the two mags that you get with the pistol or three mags. Buy some extra. You got to have extra magazines. I'm probably going to get two more for the Glock 26. Anyway, I could not notice any difference in my shooting between the flush-fitting magazines and the pinky extension. The middle finger and ring finger is what I use to get most of my grip anyway. I'm not getting, you know, when I grip a pistol with my shooting hand, my pinky is there and it's part of my grip, of course, but the middle finger and ring finger, that's where I'm getting most of my grip anyway. So once again, if somebody says they can't shoot a Glock 26 or even an M&P 9 compact, let's talk about that because, you know, that comes with a flush-fitting magazine too and there's really no place to put your pinky for most people. If they say they can't shoot that, they just haven't trained enough, seriously. I mean, that's just the way it is. They just haven't practiced enough with it. I could not tell any difference. And I was pleased about that because I like to carry a Glock 26 the way it's meant to be. I don't like to put the pinky extensions on it. It makes the grip longer, and the biggest reason I carry a 26 instead of a 19 is because I want the shorter grip. So why would I go putting on a magazine extension and making the grip almost as long as a Glock 19? Notice I said almost. Okay, it's not quite as long, and it's much more tapered, but still. I'm beginning to defeat the purpose of a Glock 26, if you ask me, when I put the pinky extension on it. However, I train both ways, and I think it's very important that you train both ways, because if you're going to have magazines set up two different ways, train with them. You never know when you might need your gun, and you might have, you know, you might be expecting the magazine with a pinky extension, but you got the flush-fitting magazine in there. So you need to train with all of them, with all the magazines you have. Like, for example, my Car PM9. I've got flush fitting magazines for that, and I've got magazines with the plus one round extension and the pinky rest. And once again, I really, with that gun, I couldn't tell the difference. All I noticed was that because it was almost 100 degrees outside and my hands were sweaty, I did enjoy having the pinky extension when my hands were sweaty. It seemed, for me anyway, on both of those guns, the G26 and the PM9, the gun didn't slip in my hand. It didn't slide in my sweaty hands as much. But that can also be fixed with grip tape or Talon grips or something like that, or just texture the grip so that you can get a good purchase on the gun. So there's a lot of things that you can do for that. You don't have to go, you know, putting on extended magazines to fix that problem. All right. Let me talk about my Glock 42. The little single stack 380. It was problematic, folks. I had a lot of problems with that. I had no problems with full metal jacket ammo. I had three different brands of FMJ. I think most of it was 90 or 95 grain. 380. Ran like a champ. As soon as I started putting hollow points in the pistol, I had all kinds of jams. The only defensive ammo that I could get to work well in my Glock 42 was Hornady Critical Defense. I shot Corbon DPX, and I shot Liberty Ammo, and I shot, what's the third brand? I'm trying to think. I think it was Spear Gold Dot 380. Yeah, it was. I had stovepipes, I had double feeds, I had failures to extract. It was ridiculous. Now, I know how to shoot the gun. I'm not limp-wristing the gun because I shot about 50 rounds of FMJ, no problem. And, you know, I think I'm a good enough shooter now where I know how to properly shoot small 380s. So I think there's something wrong with the pistol, and I'm not quite sure what it is. But today, on the same day that I recorded this podcast, I shipped it off to Glock to have them look at it. Now, I got to say, Glock's customer service was outstanding. I called them up, and within 5 minutes after I hung up, they had emailed me a label, a FedEx label, to send the gun in at their expense. And all I did was I put the pistol back in the case that it came with, and I stuck it in the FedEx box and went to a FedEx location and dropped it off. That's it. So, you know, to Glock's credit, I know other people, I've had people call in voicemails that say that they've had poor service from Glock. I tell you what, this was fantastic service. Now, let's see how the gun comes back and how it functions. But I've seen mixed reviews on the Glock 42. I have seen people say that theirs were very problematic, and I've had some people say that theirs ran like a champ. I've run about 150 rounds through the gun, so I gave it a pretty fair shake. This last practice session was only about, I think, 70 rounds or something like that, or 75 rounds. And then prior to that, I shot it about the same amount. So I can't trust my Glock 42 yet. I'm not going to carry it until I can feed a lot of hollow point ammo through that gun without any jams. A Glock should not be ammo finicky. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say this. A Glock should not be ammo finicky. None of these fighting guns should be ammo finicky. The M&Ps, the XDs, the Rugers, the Glocks. The popular polymer fighting guns, Striker Fired, Sig Sauer also. These guns should not be ammo finicky. That's baloney. If you got one of those that only likes certain types of ammo, I think you need to get it. You need to get it worked on. That's just not right. It's not right. It's a defensive gun. It's not a finely tuned 1911. A finely tuned 1911. You know, I can give those a little bit of a pass for being ammo finicky because they're a finely tuned 1911. Which, by the way, a finely tuned 1911, if it runs well, is also an excellent fighting gun. And I'm going to get to that pretty soon. So, it's gone back to Glock, and hopefully I'll have it back. I think the paperwork they sent me said it's about a two-week turnaround time, so that's not bad. I can deal with that. And as soon as I get it back, I'll be reporting back to you. I'm going to buy two boxes of hollow points. I really like the double tap stuff, and I like the Corban DPX, so I'm going to buy a box of each of those. And then I'm going to run those through and see how it feeds and see how it works. Okay, my Sig Sauer RCS, my Sig Sauer 1911. It's called the RCS. You can look it up. I'll put a link in the show notes if you don't know which model that is. Wow. Boy, I love that gun. Man, I love that gun. It is easily the most accurate pistol I've ever owned. Absolutely the most accurate pistol I've ever owned. The whole thing is just as smooth as butter. I'll tell you what. And, oh, but Bob, it's not a traditional 1911. It's got an external extractor and blah, 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 blah. Hey, the external extractor worked perfectly. I mean, I've not had a single failure with that gun. And I think I've given it about a 500-round trigger job by now. Okay? So it doesn't have a 1,000-round trigger job, but it's got a 500-round trigger job. It is smooth as butter. It is just phenomenal. And for me, you know, that CCO format, that commander with a... that, you know, combat commander with an officer's grip. You know, what that means is it's got the short grip that 1911s come. Some of the 1911s that have the short grip, you know, with the 7-round magazines. But it's got the 4 1/4-inch barrel. To me, that's wonderful. You know, I put a Facebook post up. A lot of you probably saw it. That gun carries beautifully. That gun probably carries better than any pistol I own in that size. Okay, I'm not gonna lie and say it carries better than my Shield or my Car PM9, but for a gun with a 4-inch barrel or greater, that gun, it balances wonderful for me, and in my hand it just feels terrific. The grip is the perfect length. I don't like the standard size grip on 1911s. I figured that out. I don't like the standard size, the standard length grip. I like the officer's grip. And, you know, with the checkering on the front strap and on the back strap, the only thing I've done to that gun is I put a Wilson Combat recoil spring in it, I've put an ambidextrous safety on it, and that's it. And, of course, I use Wilson Combat mags. Although, I got to tell you, I used 2 Sig Sauer mags, and no problem. No problem whatsoever with the magazines supplied by Sig Sauer. So, I prefer the Wilson Combat magazines, but it ran like a champion. It is just scary accurate. There is probably no way I'll ever be more accurate than that Sig Sauer 1911. No way. I mean, I wish I could brag, and I'm not going to, and I'm not going to lie. I think I'm a decent shooter. I think I'm a pretty good shooter. Actually, after all these years and all this training, I think I'm a pretty good shooter. But that gun will always outshoot me. It'll always be probably, as long as it stays in good condition, and I plan on keeping it in good condition, that gun will outshoot me. So I think if you're looking for a good concealed carry 1911, look at the Sig Sauer 1911, either the 1911 C3 or the 1911 RCS. And another thing I like about those guns is they use a bushing barrel, which I like. I don't really care for the bull barrel. My Desert Eagle's okay, but it's got a bull barrel, and eh. I'm not a big fan of that. And the Sig Sauer also has the short standard length guide rod that 1911s are supposed to have. Doesn't have a full length guide rod. I just like that because it's easier to field strip it and take it apart. That's the only reason why. You know, performance wise, I haven't noticed any difference in the two guns. You know, the one with the bull barrel or the one with the bushing barrel. So, you know, I just like it because it's easier to take down. But beautiful pistol. Terrific. And I ran, let's see, I'll tell you the different types of 45 ACP. I ran a bunch of Remington 230 grain ball ammo. Then I ran some 230 grain Speer Gold Dot. I ran some Corban DPX. I can't remember what the weight is. I want to say they're 185, but they might be 165 grain. And let's see, it was about 20 or 30 rounds of the Corban, 20 or 30 rounds of the Speer Gold Dot. Yeah, probably, well, I used up the whole box of Remington I had a 100-round box of Remington Full Metal Jacket. I used up that whole box. And some Liberty ammo. And the RCS just shot them all just fine. Spit them out, no problem. Extraction, no problem. Okay? Speaking of extraction, on the Gen 4 Glock 26, I had one piece of brass come back and hit me in the face. I've had a lot of people have been complaining about that, but not with my Glocks, not with my 4th Gen Glocks. They've been shooting brass out the side of the gun like they're supposed to. I had one come back and hit my face. But that's going to happen occasionally, folks. A lot of times it's going to happen. A lot of that depends on how you're holding the gun, how you're holding the gun, and a lot of it depends on you. Sometimes it's the extractor or the ejector. So you got to play around with that. You know, if you have a pistol, any pistol, that consistently sends empty brass back towards you and hits you in the face or the neck, if it's consistently doing that, you need to get it looked at. But, you know, if it's once out of every 100 rounds or so, I wouldn't sweat it. And I don't. So, you know, hats off to Sig Sauer. I think that's just a terrific 1911. I don't care that it's not a traditional 1911. I don't care that it has a firing pin safety or that it has a external extractor or that it has a square slide instead of a round slide and all that BS. I just don't care. You know, as long as it works, which it does, and as long as it's scary accurate, which it is, that's fine by me, you know. And the trigger is breaking in nicely now after, you know, around 500 rounds. At first, I got to say, the trigger on that gun was a little bit, for a 1911 single action trigger, it left a little bit to be desired. It's kind of had some creep to it. And the trigger pull was a little bit harder than I wanted it to be, but now it's really smoothed out, just like almost any other pistol. The more you shoot it, the better you get at shooting it. It's just, that's the way it is. The parts wear in, they start to break in, and the trigger parts break in, which means things are more smooth than they were when you probably took it out of the box. And, you know, speaking of pistol break-in periods, I want to talk about that. I wasn't planning on that, but let me go ahead and talk about that anyway. I think it really is too bad that so many people complain about a break-in period on a handgun. Like, for example, Car Arms says, I think they have a 250-round break-in period. Okay? It means you got to shoot 250 rounds through your gun, and, you know, you're probably going to get some malfunctions in that first 250 rounds because it's tight and it's new, and you got to break it in. Oh, man, people complain about that. Or even 1911s that need a break-in period. People complain about that all the time. Why? Why are people complaining about that? That's stupid. Don't complain about a break-in period. You know why? Because you, the shooter, you need a break-in period too, don't you? You see, I think that's what it is. I think that people don't want to admit that they need a break-in period. Right? They buy a new gun and they want the gun to make them shoot better. They don't want to put the time and effort in and spend the money on ammo and practice and training to learn how to shoot the gun effectively. Really, I think that's what it is. They won't admit it. They won't actually openly say that. But I think that most people who complain about a break-in period, I think that's deep down inside what it really is. Because, you see, first of all, you need much more than a 250-round break-in period. I've talked so much about a 1,000-round trigger job. You need 1,000 to a couple thousand rounds with your pistol, with that particular pistol, to even begin to be as good as you can be with it. That's my personal opinion. I mean, hey, it's a brand new gun after all. When you buy a brand new gun, especially if it's something different than what you're used to, let's say you're used to 1911s, but you buy a striker-fired gun, I think you're going to need a couple thousand rounds to get comfortable with that new striker-fired gun because you're so used to shooting 1911s. Don't you agree? So people who complain about a 250 or 300 or even 500 round break-in period, what are you doing? Why are people doing that? I mean, I don't know. Why do people buy a gun and then not want to get proficient with it? I don't understand that. And I'm not saying that you have to take a training class within the first month that you buy a gun. That's not what I'm saying. But get out and shoot the doggone thing. Okay? Get out and practice with it. You know, buy a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. When you buy a gun, buy 500 rounds of ammunition with it. Or soon after you buy it. That's my recommendation. Get 500 rounds of ammo. Go to the range. You don't have to do it all in one range trip. If it takes you two or three or four range trips or whatever, and go shoot the doggone thing and get used to it. And if you can, take a lesson or take a training class. You know, so anyway, enough about that. I got off on a little bit of a rant there, sorry. But the Sig Sauer RCS, just a terrific gun. Fantastic. So that's it. All in all, that's what I wanted to say about the guns. The practicing that I did, it was good to start moving and shooting again. It's been a while since I've done that. I got to tell you, you know, you've heard so many people say that shooting is a perishable skill. Boy, is it ever. And this last range trip was the first one in about a month for me. And I promise I'm never going to do that again. I'm going to get out there more than once a month. That's stupid. That's not very good of me. I need to be out there at least once every 2 weeks doing some serious practice or an IDPA match. You can get some good practice in on an IDPA match or USPSA or whatever kind of competition shooting that you like. It's good practice. I highly endorse competition shooting, even though some people think I complain about it too much. It's okay. I have the right to complain. Just like anybody has the right to complain about what they want. Hey, it's my podcast. It's my show. I can complain. I don't whine too much. I had one guy who's a pretty prominent blogger. He used to listen to my show, and he emailed me because one episode I spent a lot of time complaining about IDPA rules, the rule book. I didn't like some of the goofy rules. I still don't. So he wants to quit listening to my podcast because I spend one episode complaining about competition rules? Okay, fine. I like to think that I put a lot of value in this podcast for people to listen to, between all the guests I have and between all the topics that I cover and so forth. So if he wants to miss out on that value just because one episode I complained about some rules, I think that's kind of snarky, kind of petty if you ask me, but I hope you're not that kind of a person. See, I don't want you to agree with everything I say. I really don't. Seriously. I do not want you to agree or even like everything I say on my show. You know, take the best and leave the rest. That's always been one of my favorite mottos, and that is, you know, take the best of what you hear me say and the information that my guests share with you and leave the rest. If you don't like something that they say, fine, leave it. Take the best. Take the pearls of what they put out there. Take the few diamonds that they throw out and use them, make them your own, and run with it, and throw out the rest. But unless you hear somebody say something consistently over and over and over again that you don't like, I don't think that one episode is a reason to not listen to a show. All right, anyway, that's my two cents on that. So shoot your guns, get to know your guns, and you know, you need a break-in period just as much as the gun does, in my humble opinion. This is a good time for a break, and then I'll be back with the next segment of this episode.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is bloviating about gun shows, blaming these congenial get-togethers as a source of violence in his city. Bloomberg evidently hasn't listened to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which reports that less than 1% of guns used in crimes were bought at a gun show. Bloomberg might want to listen to the Anti-Gun Center to Prevent Handgun Violence, which surveyed large police departments and learned that less than 5% of cop shops felt that gun shows were a problem. Better yet, Bloomberg should put a chain on his local thugs and leave out-of-state gun shows alone. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
During the break, I want to formally announce that in May of 2015, Ben Branham and I are going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and we are going to team up with Paul Lathrop of the Polite Society podcast. And we're going to teach a two-day Beyond Concealed Carry enhanced class. It's going to be almost like the one that we did with John Hadaway. Not quite, but pretty close. In Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So, if you live within a decent drive of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you might want to get registered and come out and train with Ben and me. That is going to be in May of 2015. I understand that's a long way off, but our classes have been filling up a lot lately. We got people on the waiting list for Houston, and there were people on the waiting list for Seattle with Glenn Tate. Hey, by the way, everybody who was on the waiting list got a spot in the class with Glenn Tate out in Squim, Washington. We had the exact number of people cancel that were on the waiting list. So you never know. It often pays to get on the waiting list. But that class is going to be a two-day class, about 500 or 600 rounds, Beyond Concealed Carry. We have an early bird special going, $300 for the whole weekend. That's a bargain, folks. From now to the end of 2014, then it goes up to $350, which is our normal price for a two-day class. So check that out. I also want to say to all of you North Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area listeners, we're coming back in November. Check the website, handgunworld.com. You'll see the Dallas class posted. We're going to do Pistol Fighting Dynamics, The Art of Making the First Hit. That's the class that we're going to be teaching. A little bit different than Beyond Concealed Carry. Slightly more advanced than Beyond Concealed Carry. It's called Pistol Fighting Dynamics, The Art of Making the First Hit. Check that out. That's a one-day class that's going to be coming up. I can't remember the date, and I'm driving, and I'm not going to look it up, so I'm just going to ask you to go to handgunworld.com. Check it out. It is going to be in November. I'm pretty sure it's the first Saturday in November. Hey, to all of you California listeners, I've been talking about this for a while. People have already started signing up. I'm coming to Northern California. I will be teaching that class myself. I'm going to do a one-day Beyond Concealed Carry class in Northern California, October 18th. So I'm excited about that. If you're within a reasonable distance of Northern California, come train with me. Scott Sylvester, who's been on this show, he's the owner of the company One Weapon, Any Tool. I just recently interviewed him. He's a law enforcement officer in Northern California. He's also a trainer. He is going to be the host of the class. I'm also going to enlist his services to help me teach part of it because I know he's got some pretty good ideas on fighting with a handgun as well. So come on out there October 18th if you're near Northern California. You can find that on the website also at handgunworld.com. Ben and I are teaching a night fighting class in December in San Antonio, and Ben's teaching a carbine course, a rifle course. It's going to be mostly AR-15 specific, but if you want to bring an AK or a pistol caliber carbine, we're going to teach you how to run it and how to run it effectively and make good hits with it. Ben's teaching that one by himself. He's teaching the rifle class by himself October 11th. All right, those are the announcements. The Shooters Club, by the way, I want to say we have a new video coming real soon on the Shooters Club. That's only $8 a month or $75 per year. We've got over 20 videos up there that you can learn from. So if you can't make it to one of the training classes that we put on, I'd say the next best thing would be watching our videos on the Shooters Club because we do put a significant amount of the material that we teach on that members-only website. Go to handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club page. And last but not least, don't forget about my Amazon store. A lot of you have been doing it every month. Another way you can support my show, you don't have to spend any extra money, but if you're going to make a purchase on Amazon anyway, please go to handgunworld.com and buy it through my link. And then I'll get a little bit of a commission from Amazon. So just go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store. Okay, just a quick public service announcement or sound effect or something like that, and we'll get on to the next segment. Okay, this next segment, I'm not in my car. I'm sitting in a nice, air-conditioned, comfortable hotel room, so it's probably going to sound a little bit different. Anyway, I got a voicemail that came from a listener named Ken. So this segment, I'm going to talk about his voicemail because he's got a pretty good question. Let's listen first. Okay, I just realized I called the guy Ken the entire time. So, Mike, I very much apologize. Forgive me for getting your name wrong, but here goes.
Hey, Bob, this is Mike from Orlando. Hey, I really, really enjoy your show. The first impressions, that was awesome. I like hearing what people think about their products. With limited, we all have limited income, so it's nice to be able to spend your money appropriately on something that someone else has tried out. Might have different feelings than you on some things, but it doesn't matter. It's good to hear yours on that. My quick question is, you mentioned about the car PM9 appendix carry. I'm real new to that. I've tried putting a few, guns up there. They just don't feel comfortable. I thought the car might be good. What holsters do you recommend for that? I know Crossreed makes inside the waistband, and then you mentioned a couple others. Wanted to hear your impressions on your thoughts on that. And the second question I had actually is, what are your thoughts on using like a suppressor in home for home defense? I know that it'd make you look good and bad in front of the trial, but at the same time, I know it would preserve your night vision and your hearing. Hey, thanks again. Excellent job. Look forward to hearing your comments. Bye.
Ken, thanks for the call in. By the way, folks, if you want to call in a voicemail, I love getting voicemails. So please call 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or if you don't want to try to remember that number, just go to handgunworld.com. And on the right-hand side, if you scroll about halfway down, you'll see the Call Me button. And just click that Call Me button, put in your phone number, and it'll hook you up with my Google voicemail account. You got 3 minutes to leave me whatever kind of a comment or question that you'd like. And I'm pretty fair about putting people on the air. Even if you want to disagree with me about something, that's fine. I'd love to hear it. And you know what? You might even convince me to think otherwise. So, okay, let's talk about Ken's question. First of all, Ken, I think you're going to find that the car PM9 is a dream to carry in the appendix inside the waistband. It is awesome. You know, it's easily the most comfortable gun that I've ever carried appendix style. You said you've tried some. I don't know what you've tried. You didn't mention which guns you've tried, but I think you really like the car PM9 carrying it in the appendix position. I've been carrying it in the High Noon Hideaway holster for quite some time, the High Noon Hideaway. But I got to tell you, Jason Christensen recently sent me a couple samples. Actually, I bought them of the ASP 2.0. from Concealment Solutions, ASP, ASP, Appendix Specific Platform 2.0. It's on his website. Go to concealmentsolutions.com. And I've been testing that out. And I gave first impressions about that holster on last week's First Impressions podcast. It is excellent. It's a hybrid holster, so it's very, very comfortable. The hybrid leather backing with the Kydex front, it makes it fast, reliable, fast and comfortable, and it also it doesn't weigh much. The holster is very, very light, so I think you're going to like that. It's a beautiful design. It's not uncomfortable in any way. You drop a car PM9 in that holster, and I think you're going to like it. So try that, Ken. I think you'll be pleased. Now, with respect to suppressors, your question about a suppressor, using that as a home defense tool, I don't see any problem with it. Now, keep in mind, I'm not an attorney, so this is not in any way to say that this is any legal advice or anything. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, they're scary looking, okay? But putting a suppressor on your gun, in my opinion, doesn't alter the gun in any way that a lawyer, I think, could, use that against you. Now, again, I don't know. If there's some attorneys out there listening to this and you have a different opinion, maybe you've got some case law to bring it to back it up or something like that, then please email me, or better yet, call into the voicemail 210-646-1727 and let me know. But I can't see how using a suppressor would get you in any trouble. Now, what I can tell you, though, is putting a suppressor on a gun makes it a lot longer, obviously. So I keep my handgun, especially my bedside gun for home defense, I keep mine in a pretty small safe, a pretty small push-button safe. I don't think it would fit in there with the suppressor on it. So that's something that you got to consider, Ken, and that is, you know, do you have a place to safely store that gun and access it? Do you have a safe that you can access it? Or maybe you don't use a safe. I don't know. Maybe you're the kind that, you know, keeps a gun in the house and you don't have it in a safe. That, I mean, that's up to you. Whatever it is that you do, just make sure, you know, keep in mind it's going to make that, it's going to put an extra several inches on the muzzle of your gun. So think about that. But it's not a bad idea because, like you said, it would save your hearing and it would save your vision. And I think a lot of folks, that would be a big deal for home defense. So good question. Thanks for calling that in, Ken. You know, I can say this. Just try going outside to an outdoor range and shoot your handgun with no hearing protection. Just try that like once or twice at the most. All right, I don't want you to destroy your hearing. But the reason I say that is think about how loud it is outside without any hearing protection. Now go inside. Don't try this. Don't go to an indoor range and fire your handgun with no hearing protection. But if you do, I think you'll highly regret it anyway. Actually, one time I was shooting an IDPA match indoors, and I took my earmuffs were getting a little uncomfortable, and I had to go to the restroom. So I took my earmuffs off about 10 feet before I left the range, the indoor range, the shooting area, and somebody touched off a round out of their handgun just before I got to the other side of the door that blocks the sound. And boy, I tell you what, that was not very pleasant at all. It was not pleasant at all. Well, that's what it's going to be like shooting a handgun in your house. Have you ever thought about that? So Ken brings up a pretty good idea, and that is, you know, using a suppressor for home defense. I think it depends on where you live. Do you live in a state that's friendly to suppressors? You know, if you live in California, it might cause you some issues. But, you know, here in Texas, I don't know. It probably wouldn't. So, again, if your local laws, if your state is pretty friendly and you being able to buy guns and buy suppressors and things like that, I think you're probably going to be okay. But, you know, just try that experiment one time and notice how loud your gun is when you shoot it outside. It's going to be a whole lot louder shooting it indoors. Now, I know some people that keep a set of earmuffs next to their bedside at night as well. So, and their theory is they're going to throw their earmuffs on and their gun and then grab their gun and start shooting if they have to. You know, I don't know if that would really work or not for most people. I mean, you know, things happen so fast, folks. In a self-defense encounter, things happen so fast. And if you're awoken in the middle of the night and you're awoken by some bad guys, you know, you're probably going to be a little bit disoriented and think about it all. Just kind of think about it. You know, it's going to slow you down trying to put earmuffs on first and get your gun at the same time. You'd have to really, really practice that quite a bit. So you bring up an interesting point, Ken. And I think that's kind of this is a good point, and this is a good way for me to kind of end this episode. And I want people to think about both of Ken's questions here and get back to me. Give me a call, 210-646-1727. Send me a voicemail or at the very least an email and let me know what you think. And by the way, folks, I want to finish up by saying that you can follow me on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast, you can find me there. I'm Handgun World on Twitter. And also check out my YouTube channel. Just search Handgun World on YouTube and my channel will also pop up pretty quickly. So with all that said, thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob May and I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. But you know what? Maybe that wouldn't be so loud Maybe that bang, when he's expecting a click, wouldn't be so loud if he had a suppressor. I don't know. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he popped the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy.